Hello, everyone, and welcome to Oops All Anime, our journey through all of anime, one cell at a time. I am your fill-in host, Kyrie Page.
I am the co-host, Jennifer Uncle.
And I am the secret third host, Jackie Platinum. You've inputted the code. You've unlocked me. Congrats.
Yeah, forward, down, down, forward, heavy punch.
That's not the code. It's up, up, down, down, left, right, left, right, BA, star. Come on.
Okay,
it's classic.
I guess I gotta turn in my fucking credibility.
Yeah, you gotta turn in your gamer badge. You're not...
I turned in my cock and gamer badge.
You broke gamer edge. You're taking your powers away.
Oh my god. I can't believe it.
So how about that Scott guy?
That Scott guy? Yes, because today we are talking about Scott Pilgrim Takes Off. God, so this is the new anime from Netflix. It's by Science Sorrow animating it, and also we're talking about the whole damn thing because Netflix does what Netflix does, and they just released every episode all at once, which is
it is a format. It is certainly a decision you can make as a publisher.
I don't love it, but. You know.
Yeah, I think the thing is, I kind of like it because I do tend to just watch stuff all in one go. But
could you imagine people sitting on episode one for a week?
Every single episode kind of ends in like it all kind of ends and runs in a way that like if they chose to air this weekly, they would make a lot of money off of it because people would not shut the fuck up about it. People would have so many takes.
Jen?
That's always the funny thing to me with Netflix. Netflix is a series, is a service where you're billed monthly. So releasing it weekly would keep people subscribed, you think, except they never fucking do that.
I think the thing is, that might make it more obvious that you're paying monthly, you know? If you're only joining up for like one show, like I think Netflix's big cash cow was Stranger Things. So like that was the first one that really like blew it up. I think that if people were like waiting every week for a Stranger Things episode, they'd be like, I've paid for 3 months for like 12 episodes of Stranger Things. Why am I doing this? I should just pay 1 month at the very end when all the episodes are already out. And, you know, we go. And I think that's the logic behind it. Not saying it's like good logic, but there is logic.
It is. There is something there. But let's kind of get into it. Jen, can you give us a summary of Scott Pilgrim Takes Off?
Sure thing. Scott Pilgrim, an unemployed 23-year-old who spends his days playing guitar for an unpopular indie band, meets the girl of his dreams, Ramona Flowers, who uses the subspace corridor in his head to deliver DVDs for Netflix. After the two of them hit it off and go on a date, Scott's friends let him know that he has to dump Knives Chow, the high schooler he was dating up till now. Scott puts this important task off until an evening concert where both Ramona and Knives are present, and suddenly finds himself attacked by Matthew Patel, one of Ramona's seven evil exes. But much to Matthew and the narrator's surprise, Scott loses and bursts into a few coins. Ramona, convinced that Scott is still alive, takes it upon herself to play detective, investigating her evil exes, determined to find the truth about that night.
So, this is a sequel series.
It is Rebuild of Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, so like it. So I would say this is something that like, if somebody doesn't know anything about Scott Pilgrim, you can kind of show them this in confidence that they will like grok the general plot beats that are supposed to happen and realize where they've been subverted, and they'll have like a good time, you know, watching along. But like, you kind of at least have to watch the movie or like read the books, like immediately after or at some point before you watch this,
so yeah, you can kind like,
of, yeah, it's like it's kind of like watching the parody before the original.
I want to know if I would go that far, but like I see where you're coming from. It's like I think so. A little bit of background: I've read both the comic and I watched the movie when it came out, and I've rewatched it since. That movie, when did that come out? It was
2009.
2009,
yeah. I watched that movie like 20 times. That was one of my favorite movies. It was a box office bomb.
Yeah. Which,
really?
Oh, yeah. No, it flopped. Like, critical reception was great. Like, people, you know, people with taste loved it. But it's like, it is a hard pitch. And it, especially in, like, 2009, leaning very hard into, like, this guy is a loser nerd who loves video games and, like, tries to pick up girls with video game trivia. Like, that was not an easy sell to, like, the public at large.
Yeah. Just think, if they had waited a few more years and until right around the time Ready Player One came out, it probably would have done a bit better, maybe?
Maybe, but
the thing is, Ready Player One fundamentally, was such a... Scott Pilgrim is just a very different, like... Ready Player One is about, like, how having all that video game knowledge makes you cool. And, like, suited for the new world where gamers will rise up. And Scott Pilgrim is about how, like, you know, being the Ready Player One guy makes you a huge tool.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like, and also your knowledge of video games isn't actually helping you deal with actual human relationships, Scott. Because at the center of all this is one Scott Pilgrim, who is...
He's a tool. He sucks.
He's a tool. He rocks. He's a tool. He sucks, and he's a little. He's so he is great. A little Bebo.
Like, I love that he sucks. Is the thing. Like, yeah. Because like it is a coming of age story, and one of the like big things I kind of like I read. I mean, I read through the comic, of course. I also one of the big things about it is that like. Your 20s are kind of just an extension of your teens, you know? Like, it's about kind of how nobody has that shit figured out. Mm-hmm. And it feels like, one of the reasons I say, like, it's a sequel series that you have to have, that you should, if you don't have the context, you're going to want the context of the greater series, just because, like, Takes Off feels like, I blanked on the name, I was going to say Edgar Wright, but it's Brian Lee O'Malley's the writer, Edgar Wright's the director. It feels like Brian Lee O'Malley in conversation with himself, essentially, for, like, the changed ending of the movie, and then like, the comics themselves.
Right. I mean, the changes are immediate, because, like, you know, at the end of, so, the first episode is, like, that is just like a really straightforward, like an almost like a really straightforward
first act.
Yeah, it's a like, an adaptation of like the first couple chapters of the comic book.
Yeah, it bullet points the characters, bullet points the scenario, dives you right in there, and then subverts at the very end, which was really effective. Like, it worked really well.
That's what happened. Like, what happened was we watched the first episode together, and then the next day, Jen and I just watched the rest of the series because we were like, oh shit, what? Because, like, I do love you have the bit in the episode where the narrator, as Jen mentioned in the summary, goes, Matthew won? Like, even the narrator is flummoxed.
It was good.
Go ahead.
Yeah, when I was going into this, like, my one thought is, like, funnily enough, my one thought was, damn, I hope they do more with Matthew Patel in this one, and boy, do they ever.
God, his Patel arc was so fantastic. Fucking
good.
I really do love that they were able to keep it, like, essentially under wraps when they were advertising it as, like, an adaptation of the Scott Pilgrim comics, because, like, people really were out there, like, expecting just straightforward, here's your 6 volumes, thank you, in like 12 episodes I think they were expecting, 8 episodes, here's your 6 volumes of Scott Pilgrim, goodbye, thank you. But no, they've got like a whole different story, new dimension on all the characters, which, I mean, I think the new dimension was sorely needed, like as we said with like Matthew Patel. In the comics and in the movie, he shows up and gets punched in the face and that's it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing that's baffled me about the reception to this is that a lot of fans seem, well, as a vocal minority of fans probably, have talked about how angry they are that this was false advertising and they should have gotten a straight adaptation or whatever.
If you want a straight adaptation, read the comic.
That's the thing is, like, a lot of the people who have read, like, comics where the protagonist is a tool are like, he's just like me, for real, for real. And without the self, like, it's a comic about self-awareness, but, like, to be honest, you know, that can go over people's heads. Like, I'm sure those people just don't get it.
Like, maybe, I guess I was lucky, like, when I saw, like, Versus the World in 2009, I was, like, on some level, I was like, oh, Scott's just like me, but also just had the realization, oh, he's a tool. I need to, like, change some things about myself.
Yeah. Well, Scott Pilgrim's a tool, but he's a tool because he doesn't respect himself. You know, that's kind of, like, that's kind of the through line of the movie, at least. Which is just a really minor deviation of the through line for the comic. But the idea is, like, you know, Scott Pilgrim sucks because he doesn't, you know, he doesn't hold himself to any sort of standard, so he's just kind of constantly, you know, chasing, like, really, like, validation, you know? Which is why, like, every Scott Pilgrim, you know, the first episode of Takes Off, the, you know, first line in the movie, the first line in the comic is Scott Pilgrim's dating a high schooler, you know?
Yeah.
Because I do like the touch. It's so simple. And it's like, she's the fucking high schooler, dude.
Yeah, and I think they're, like, to me, I've always read that as, like, part of, like, Scott's immaturity.
Is just sort of, like, it's because he's a man child. He can't handle an adult relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So he's giving up before he's giving up before the word go.
Exactly. And real quick, I want to, like, there's so much to talk about here, but, like, one thing I want to shout out is, like, so they got, like, basically every principal actor from the Versus the World movie to come back to voice all their characters, and that's, one, an amazing feat of, like, scheduling, because, like, most of these actors are now, like, I know Chris Evans and Aubrey Plaza are now in the Marvel, like, sausage factory.
The funny thing is, some of these actors are much bigger than they used to be. Others, like Brandon Routh, it's like, oh, buddy, it used to be Superman, and now I barely hear about you.
Brandon Routh is so fucking funny in this show. We will get to the Todd stuff in a little bit. But I do love, like, shout-outs to Michael Cera, like, reprising his role as Scott in somehow sounding younger than he did when he was playing Scott, like, 10-15 years ago.
It is crazy.
His performance, and I think the thing is, like, the thing about his performance is there's this, like, aching sincerity to it, to how much of a tool he is, and it's like, it's like, I find, like, the Scott of Takes Off to be so much more charming than the Scott of the comic or the movie, and I think that's, like, a lot of the characters. Like, a lot of the characters are just so much more charming than they were, like, originally. I think it has a lot to do with the new voice directing, but also, like, Science Saru's, like, animation and the way they, like, depict these characters.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, Brian Lee O'Malley's designs translate super well to animation. Literally perfectly. The Science Saru team had to, like, fantastic. They did a really good job on it, and, you know, they've kind of proven themselves to be, like, one of, like, probably the best in the best studio in the industry. I would, like, a really solid argument for it.
Yeah,
like, there's not a ton of, like, I wouldn't say there's a, like, a massive amount of Sakuga in Scott Pilgrim, but there is, like, a lot of really good visual character acting.
I love what they've done with Ramona. Like,
oh my god, Ramona, they did a really good job on her.
The Manic Pixie Dream Girl also makes some of the funniest faces you've ever seen.
Well, like, I think a large part of it is that, like, we're getting new perspective on these characters. Like, the decision to make Ramona the protagonist was probably the best possible starting point you could have asked for. Because in the comics, she emotes. She's, you know, she's emotive. She's pretty well-rounded. But, like, not real. Like, we just kind of see her through, like, you know, it's third-person limited perspective. We're spending a lot of time with Scott in the comics, so we don't really get much perspective on Ramona. So we don't really see as much of her. Like, she's more of a goal to be attained than a, like, you know, than someone down there in the trenches with you. In the animated series and Takes Off, she is right there front and center. So we get to see her like handling stuff messily. We get to see her like, you know, express herself in a lot of different ways. As kind of a mirror to how we saw Scott express himself in the comics and in the and Michael Cera as Scott in the movie.
I think, like, piggybacking off of that, like, Jen, what did you think of, like, the focus on Ramona, like, during this series? What did you think about all that?
I really liked it, because it, basically turning it into a whodunit, serves two purposes. One, you get to spend a whole lot more time with all the characters around Scott. You get to see just, like, what their lives are like, their weaker moments, and, more importantly, though, it goes into the way Ramona handled each one of them before they broke it off, and it's kind of a look into how she fucked up at certain points, but it's not too late for her to go to each ex and reconcile someone.
This is why, like, episode 3 is probably one of the best episodes, like, in this series, because I wanna talk a little bit about, like, Roxy as a character.
Like, shortly. I think, because, like, this is present in both the movie and the comic, but, like, Ramona's whole deal is that she is afraid of rejection, so she does the rejecting first. And when we see that from Scott's perspective, it's like, wow, she's kind of an asshole. When we see it from Ramona's perspective, it's like, wow, she is a huge, she's as bad, if not worse, than Scott here. And we also got a lot of characterization out of Scott. We'll get to that later, but the exes are super important. Like, I mean, that for like the second episode, a huge chunk of it was dedicated to just Matthew Patel with that ego boost, like achieving an ambition of his, like taking over the League of Evil Exes, and
Well, like, his initial thing was, like, I beat Scott Pilgrim, so what does that mean for me? He deserves better. Yeah, he deserves better. And then he's, like, he has this really incredible fight with Gideon and gets him to, like, sign over, like, everything Gideon has. But to become the new CEO. Fucking takes his underwear,
dog. Can't have shit in New York City.
I love Matthew is just so fucking good in this show.
Matthew Patel is so good. I love in the fifth episode when he touches down in that fucking helicopter playing Sharp Dressed Man, and he pulls out and he's like, fires everybody. What a dick, Brock.
He's such a huge dick. And then, like, one of the subplots in the show is Steven and Knives are trying to...
Neil writes a manuscript after Scott gets exploded into a billion pieces. Young Neil writes a manuscript that's essentially, what if Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the movie, happened instead? Mm-hmm. This leans into, like, spoilers. This leads into a time travel plot. That like compounds on the intrigue, but, like, you know. After that gets scrapped, it gets turned into a musical of Steven Knives.
Right. And then we find out, like, all Matthew really wants is to star in his own off-Broadway musical, and he kills it there. To which I'm looking forward to at the next, like, anime con I go to, is seeing people as Matthew Patel cosplaying as Scott Pilgrim, because that's just a very funny image.
It's great. It's really funny that we've had Lucas Lee, Todd Ingram, and Matthew Patel all dressed as Scott Pilgrim in the same show.
Yeah. And you get multiple instances where Ramona's like, I'm looking for Scott Pilgrim, and they're just like, I'm Scott Pilgrim.
It's really funny.
So let's talk about Roxy. Roxy like a hurricane.
Yep. So
that's like that's the worst breakup Ramona's done, I think. That was fucking brutal.
Yep.
I think, yeah, it is I think, like, episode three is probably, like, episode three by itself is just this, like, really incredible thing because, you know, Ramona is asking around, people, like, who might have, like, known Scott, who would have wanted to see Scott, like, dead, right? And she goes to Kim's video store, and Roxy shows up, because the League is, like, disbanded, sort of disbanded, but she has beef with Ramona. And it starts with this fight where it's about, like, they, you know, Ramona and Roxy get into an argument about, like, not being able to talk about their feelings, which leads to...
It's all kind of pretense for the fight.
Like, yeah, that's pretense for the fight.
Yeah, like, I don't think Ramona does pointedly, like, call Roxy's bluff and say, you want to talk about your feelings, then talk, and Roxy's like, fuck you, I'm gonna fight you. And the fight scene's great. It's really well choreographed. They all, like, it starts off with a really strong hit from Ramona, like, with her big stupid mallet. There's a real huge sense of kinesis to it, like, and then it just kind of devolves into, like, you know, a messy slugfest as they kind of careen through movie sets.
Right. And then you get the scene when they are on this, like, airplane that is crashing into the Earth. You get this, like, who's the actress that plays Roxy?
That is a good-ass question. I don't know.
That's Mae Whitman.
Mae Whitman just puts on this incredible performance. I might even just, I'll just drop in like a, like, audio clip, like, kind of around here.
I was too afraid to face you.
So you left without a word? You made me feel like nothing. You were afraid. Good for you. All I wanted was for you to see me.
I'm sorry.
Apology accepted. But that doesn't mean I'm gonna let you win.
But you get, like, so much, like, she has so much pain and hurt in her voice as she tells Ramona, like, I just wanted you to see me.
Yeah, it's like a lot of pathos. I really like how it expounds on how Ramona broke up with her girlfriends, because, like, in the movie,
oh, she's treated so flippantly in the movie.
Well, I mean, it is very much in the movie, like, Ramona is the asshole here, and, like, Ramona is treating her flippantly, and that is, like, you know, that's kind of the red flag where it's like, whoa, hold on. But, yeah, like, in the movie, it's kind of like, you had a sexy phase, you know, it gets
flattened.
Played off as a joke. Almost. Well, not like a joke. It's not, like, super disrespectful, but there is, like, this lack of, like, gravity to it. And then it takes off. It's like, oh, yeah, we see sad, wet dog lesbian Roxy Richter in their shared apartment watching Ramona, like, not even say anything to her as she leaves. And it's like, wow. Wow, Ramona, you're an asshole.
Yeah. Like, you, like, in, like, in the movie and the comic, it basically is this.
Early 20s are the worst.
Yeah. It's this idea of, like, oh, it meant nothing to me. And Roxy is like, it meant nothing to you? Like, because it clearly meant a lot to her.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, like, I think I do love how the fight ends with Ramona, like, apologizing to her and, like, really, like, in meaning it, too, where she realizes, like, no, I really hurt this person.
I mean, that's the kind of the through line, is that, like, it's kind of Scott Pilgrim in reverse, where Ramona has to work through these relationship problems that she created and kind of reconcile with all her exes before she can figure out what happened to Scott. And, like, when it comes to, Roxy, it's like, yeah, Ramona was an asshole. And it addresses that. It treats that with, like, actual gravity. There's, like, it's kind of corny the way the fight ends is just a kind of a shot for shot parody of the fight between Naruto and Sasuke, at the very end of Shippuden, and I didn't realize it until I watched it like for a third time, and I'm like, wait, hold on, let me get my team of forensic analysts on this.
Yeah, listen, I will, like, I'll take it, because like the animators like sneaking in references like that is like, oh, that's rocks. The type of reference it rocks, like
it rips. We'll get into it's it crazy.
Like in the final battle, there's a Broly reference. It's sick. Go ahead, yeah. Jim.
There's some wild fucking inserts they put into various nerd thing. Not even like obvious video game stuff. There's a, they quote Southland Tales, like that movie that Richard Kelly made after Donnie Darko.
Yeah, there are some Hail Mary references. One of the things I really like is that like Scott Pilgrim's setting is like, Brian Lee O'Malley obviously sees that as like a tool he can use. It's like a narrative tool rather than like something that's really like has to be set in stone and fully world built and make 100% sense. Like, and because of that, there's a lot of really fun stuff and a lot of really fun like levels of exaggeration that go into things and like references that don't feel like weirdly forced. You know, everything kind of flows supernaturally, which is something I really like.
Yeah, like, fans were asking why people were holding a funeral for Scott Pilgrim when previously Brian mentioned that whenever the exes are defeated, they just respawn elsewhere. And he was like, well, a funeral would be really funny here. And it was.
Yeah, it was great. The funeral was fantastic. I think I fucking think about, like
Envy Adams, I think showing about up.
Knives. So okay, we are gonna have to bring up how Knives is like the best character in this. By the way, we're gonna have to loop back around to this. But I think about it all the time. You know, when Envy Adams walks in, and the way that I forget her name, the woman who plays Knives just delivers Envy Adams and fucking and like just delivers the whole. It's just. It's great. It's fantastic. It nails it.
Yeah, that's Ellen Wong.
Ellen Wong. Okay, yeah. No, she does a great job. She's a treasure.
It's really good because like you get this bit where at Scott's funeral, Envy Adams shows up and Knives broken up about this is wearing like she's wearing a Sex Bomb shirt, but then like under it is the Clash of Demonhead shirt.
She's also wearing Scott's jacket, which she throws off before she throws off the Sex Bomb shirt.
Yeah,
which is really funny. I she also wears that jacket way better than Scott. I think if there's one thing that Takes Off needed, it was more Knives in the huge X-Men jacket.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I like drawn by Brian Lee O'Malley on Onomonoguchi's like tour poster is Knives in the jacket playing bass.
Oh, that it's rips.
Really good.
Yeah,
I think I saw that one. Yeah, I didn't realize that was their tour poster.
Yeah,
and they got Metric back for this one episode too, just so that they could cover "I Will Remember You."
Yeah,
which is so fucking funny.
I really do adore how they characterized Envy. So I was a comic diehard like shortly before the movie, like when the movie was announced, I'm like, oh, I should those comics have been on my backlog. I should read that. And I adored that like Envy's entire deal in the comics is that like she grew up before Scott. And that's why their breakup was so withering, is that like she basically like was the same person Scott was and then, you know, grew up and took herself seriously. And then like, turned to Scott and was like, can you do this? And he was like, no. And he got really mad about that. And that was like a trauma event for him because he realized, because he was just left in the dust. And she is so, she's still, I mean, you know, and he was mean to her, of course. And he's like, and she's bitter about it now. So she shows up to his funeral and makes it all about her hosting a gorilla concert. It's great. It's really good character work. I love that it gets commented upon later by Roxy when it's like, Scott Pilgrim? You mean the guy who, like, because Scott doesn't become relevant. She's like, she only knows him as, like, the guy whose funeral was inexplicably attended by this huge superstar.
Mm-hmm.
It's it's great stuff like that.
It's really funny. Speaking of stuff that's pretty funny, episode 4. Is a treat because that's the Lucas Lee episode.
Oh, the Lucas Lee episode. Whatever.
Whatever. Starting off with, like, a skate video basically set to Liam Lynch. It's Liam Lynch, right?
Yeah, it's Liam Lynch. I haven't thought about United States of Whatever for, like, 15 years, maybe. And I hadn't, like, that has been out of my brain. And then that episode showed, and I'm like, oh yeah, no, this is maybe the best series of, this is the anime of the year.
Yeah, like, I think the thing that's, like, really good about that episode has to do with, like, so, and you can remind me a little bit about this, Jackie, but, like, Lee's characterization in the comic is one of, he's just, like, if I recall correctly, when Scott confronts him in the comic, he's like, yeah, whatever, I don't care.
Yeah, he's like, I will give you $500 to fuck off. Like,
I think
he bribes, either he bribes Scott or he asks for a bribe from Scott to, like, report that, like, oh yeah, I killed him. I killed Scott Pilgrim, whatever. And, mm-hmm. and like, it's like a get out of jail free. And Scott, like, rejects it. I know in the movie he's a huge douche, but, like, Lucas Lee's an asshole, like, in both of those continuities.
Sure, but, like, he's a different type of asshole in the movie, because you have Chris Evans just doing an immaculate job playing, like, the biggest dirtbag you've ever seen, and he's, like, incredible. But I think the thing is, in this episode, is you have the various ranges of him being an asshole while also giving just that, those moments of pathos and sympathy, and I think it has a lot to do with, like, I was, of the most surprising, like, vocal performances, I think Chris Evans, like, surprised me the most, because, like, he has this ridiculous affect that he has for Lucas Lee, yeah, that he had in the movies, that doesn't sound like anything like his voice, and yet he is able to keep that affect up while also talking about, like, you know, this trauma event of Ramona breaking up with him. Right?
Did it really use much pathos? I feel like the only pathos was, like, towards the end when he was like, oh yeah, now I'm in ruins, and also, like, you did like, literally just cheat on me in front of my face in high school, to Ramona, but I don't super remember.
They kind of made him
charming first. He was just really funny. He's just like,
yeah,
because, like, Lucas Lee is living well. Like, I think that's one of the things that I really like about Takes Off, is that, like, you know, because we're looking at it from Ramona's perspective, and mm-hmm. rather than, like, you know, Scott's, who has to actively fight these people, all of them have kind of moved on. All of her exes don't really care about her that much anymore, aside from, like, Roxy and Gideon. Like, Matthew Patel, I feel like he mostly shows up out of his own ego. The Katya and Nagi twins are basically non-present, like, they're non-present in maybe the funniest possible way. Like, Gideon he doesn't even care about Ramona. I mean, by the end, nobody actually really cares. Nobody wants Ramona back, either way.
Except Roxy, but part of Roxy's arc is her just being like, oh, there are other women.
Yeah, Roxy's whole thing is that, like, here's the thing, Roxy will take any woman who will have her, which is, I mean, it's really funny. She's just,
yeah, listen,
go ahead, Jen.
people made a big deal out of the part where Kim just goes to kiss her for a moment just to see if it works. It's like, no sparks. But then the funnier part to me is then Roxy's immediate response is, oh, do you have any other women employees I can kiss?
No, she was talking, she very specifically was like, oh, when does your hot friend get back from break? Which I think is really funny. I think it was really good, because it's just like, yeah, no, Roxy just, she's single and ready to mingle. She's got, her trauma is over. She's here to fuck.
I think Roxy, like, that bit is just so funny. Because, like, also, shout outs to this show, the Scott Pilgrim anime having, like, more Yuri and Yaoi that we'll talk about than, like, most shows this season.
It's up there with 100 GFs, as far as, well, okay, Chuck. There was barking. It's up there with 100 GFs, I think. Well, 100 GFs didn't really have much Yaoi, but there was some Yuri in there.
There's some Yuri in there.
There's a lot of Yuri in the 100 GFs manga. We could get into that eventually, but, like, not a priority. But there is pointedly It is good. This is my gorilla recommendation. You should read 100 GFs. It's got 100 girls in them, and they're all good.
100. They're all freakazoids.
They are. They are all. That's what. So like. Okay. So looping back around to Scott Pilgrim, that's a thing that I do really enjoy. Is that because it is Ramona's perspective, because we see a lot of knives, because we get a whole episode devoted to Roxy instead of just like 15 minutes or like a chapter where she's kind of a footnote to Scott's power of love thing. And Kim, you know, the women in this, and Julie. Oh my God, Julie Powers. The women in this are so prominent. There's a lot going on with them, including like sexuality stuff, which I think is like a really, like, it makes them all feel way more well-rounded as characters.
Yeah, like,
it's good.
There
writing.
Is this, yeah, it's really good. And I think that there is this Brian Lee O'Malley is now a lot more comfortable writing like bisexual and queer characters just in general, because a lot of the cast are queer. I think there is a sort of like, it helps that, like, you know, he's had this perspective, but he's very, very clearly like cares about these characters a lot, and it's just, it's really something. But we gotta talk about the Todd and Wallace stuff. It's so
oh my
funny.
God, the Todd and Wallace stuff.
Wallace is such a bitch.
Such a bitch. He's so good. He's the best. Wallace in this show is the, like, okay, big Wallace Wells fan is the thing. I think not Macaulay Culkin, his brother.
Kieran Culkin?
Kieran Culkin. Oh my God. Kieran Culkin does a fantastic job as Wallace, like, in both the movie and in Takes Off, and Brian Lee O'Malley does a really good job of writing him in the comic. He is like, the best. Wallace Wells is just an incredibly charming character, and he gets, like, he's not as prominent as maybe would have been, like, I can't even say it would have been ideal. I honestly think that Scott Pilgrim Takes Off is the best possible version of itself. You know, I don't think there are any changes I could make to the narrative that would be like, oh yeah, this is objectively better. I really kind of want more Wallace Wells. Like, I would like a spinoff where we just like follow him around because he is like such a bitch in this, and it's so good. I love the stunt doubles bit.
Oh, with straight Wallace?
I love that he's... Okay, so one of the best bits that the show does, first and foremost, is straight Wallace, where there's a guy where there's a straight act... In the movie version, in the in-universe movie that is being shot of Scott Pilgrim's Precious Little Life, that there is a character, Wallace Wells... who is not being played by Wallace Wells himself, but by a straight actor pretending to be Wallace Wells, and he gays up his lines like really, really offensively, and Wallace Wells heckles him so bad that he gets kicked off of the crew, and Wallace Wells gets made to play himself.
And one of the it's like he gets this really funny line where it's like, well, I already like being myself, why might as well get paid for it? Or something.
It's a
like
fantastic call forward to the entire reason this plot happens. Because the line he says is, How about you create a time machine and go back in time and you never audition for this part? And I adore that's like a recurring like thing that Wallace Wells kind of just tells people is like a roundabout way to be like, how about you stop being a bitch? And Scott takes it seriously, and that's why we're in this mess.
it's such a innocuous, like, not even innocuous line. It's just like this simple, like, stupid joke that
it's such a good like joke that the audience knows is a joke that like Scott reasonably would not know is a joke, you know? And it's really funny that the Katayanagi twins, I know we're jumping around, but like future Scott and the bubblegum crisis
cover.
The bubble, like Koi no Hurricane.
Konyawa Hurricane.
Hurricane. Oh my god. Yeah, that was so fucking good. I love that they were dressed up like, presumably, I think one of them was a Jet Set Radio guy, and the other one was a WarioWare guy. Like, actually, fantastic. Has all the energy of, like, one of those shitty mid-2000s, like, indie band music videos. Like,
yeah.
Three guys in their basement. Just really, really good shit.
Yeah, if there was anyone I wanted a little bit more in, it was probably the twins, but I do think it's kind of perfect that when they run into him again, when Scott is found and basically brought back to the present, they're like, oh yeah, I know what our robot's doing all the time, so we're just cool with you, because we know we're going to be friends with you later.
Yeah, it's like, we're bros in the future, so see you later, bro. And it's like, it's so good, because like, they kind of... The twins didn't really matter in the comic or the movie, really. You could have probably cut them out without much issue. But I really adore how in this they are super minor parts, which makes sense because they probably got over Ramona the quickest. Like, she kind of, like... Because, like, the whole reason they would be angry at her is, like, she cheated on them with each other. But, like, they kind of would have the realization that they were being assholes, too, you know? And kind of get over it.
You would hope. Yeah. Like, they seem to be, like, the most well-adjusted of the league, where they just, like, they don't have beef with Scott, really. They're just kind of there.
They're kind of just chilling. He's our special little buddy, as they say. They built a robot and gendered him.
Very funny joke there.
God. Okay, so here's the thing. I think, mercifully, Scott Pilgrim Takes Off is not true to its period. It doesn't use 2000s language for everything. There are some references to the fact that it is in the 2000s. Like, I really adore when Lucas Lee says, I'm like a show that's not on the air anymore. I wish there was a word for this.
I read that in two different ways. I thought it's like either lost, like it's clearly like either a lost media joke, or I was thinking canceled, like he was making
directly a reference to canceled. But now I'm thinking like,
I mean, lost media thing is more of a recent trend of like,
but it's definitely a reference to like, oh, cancel culture.
Yeah, which is extremely funny.
I'm kind of glad that like I would, if you told me that there was I feel like every like modern reboot addresses like cancel culture like it's an elephant in the room, and I'm very happy that the show that's the only reference to like canceling, you know, in Scott Pilgrim Takes Off.
And it's like one of the funniest jokes. Like, it's just such a funny, it's a really
good
joke.
It's a really good offhand joke. God, there are some fantastic bits. We didn't even cover Gideon Graves. Sorry, Gordon Goose.
Gordon Goose.
So, I'm sorry. Fearless, they call him because he wears those no fear shirts. I love that they seed the I wore no fear shirts every day in high school. Really early in. And then they just pay it off with like, oh yeah, no, when he gets like taken in by Julie, he's just like on her couch in the fucking no fear shirt,
eating her potato chips. Go ahead,
God, eating her potato chips.
So one of the best creative decisions, Brian Lee O'Malley and his co-writer, whose name I keep forgetting, which is bad because Ben David Grabinski. One of the best decisions both of them made was, like, I really like Audrey Plaza, I really like Jason Schwartzman, what if I just wrote an excuse for both of them to play off each other a bunch?
Oh, it's so
there's
good.
There's this incredible bit in, like, it's episode 5 or 6, in which, like, I think it's episode 6, in which, like, Julie is leaving the house to explain to Ramona that it was neither of them who kidnapped Scott, right? And it's just this moment where Julie leaving the house, like, you have Gideon going, I love you, and she goes, I love you fucking more.
No, here's the thing, it's better.
Because very pointedly.
Or I'll miss you. Like, I miss
yeah,
you.
Yeah. So she's like, I'm going out. I'll be back in a bit. And he's like, goodbye. I'll miss you. And she's like, with that exact fucking inflection.
I'll
miss you fucking more. It's so good. The delivery. So also, I'm going to be honest. I need to find out. I got to like real quick check to see who plays Gideon Graves, because I'm going to blow up. My brain's turning into mush.
That's Jason Schwartzman.
Yeah. His deliveries as Gordon Goose, the goofy little like the goofy little persona man. That he's the saddest, wettest man, the goofiest little bean that Gideon devolves into, is perfect. Like actual perfection. Like no notes, you nailed it in one, my man. You got it. Like if I had a medal, I'd give it to you. That was so fucking good. Just every bit of his affectation is great. I love all the stuff they do with him. All the stuff that, like, you know, the writers do with him. I love the fucking bit with him and Lucas Lee.
Oh, yeah, where at the beginning of episode 6, like, they are just hanging out, watching anime, and building skate ramps in the house.
Like, oh, yeah. I see that, like, I love that montage because it's, like, I love that montage for a lot of reasons. But I love that it starts with, like, you know, like, Lucas Lee calls Gideon up, and first and foremost is like, your go for Goose is how he picks up the phone, which is so fucking good.
it's funny.
It's fantastic. But, like, they have this conversation, he's like, forgiveness? I have something different in mind. And it's like, oh, are they going to fight? And then as soon as Lucas Lee shows up, friendship!
They are, it is
the best, actually. It's so good. It's the best direction for Gideon's character, by the way. Like, it's way better than his canon iterations. Or not canon, his alternative iterations, like in the comics and in the movie. Because, like, In the comics, he's like actually evil in a way that like the other X's kind of aren't. Like the other X's are like jerks and they're jilted. Gideon's like using mind control and freezing his ex-girlfriends. Like that's weird. Like it's kind of disproportionate. And I get that that's kind of the joke, but I feel like it's not that it's aged poorly. It's that it's not the optimal play, you know, like it's not the best possible direction for this character to be in. And then in the movie, it's already kind of that, but toned down. And they just do away with that immediately in the comic. And we actually he gets to be a character.
Yeah, like I think he has like some decent stuff like in the movie, but like they really have to downplay like how much of a villain he is like in the comic. And maybe to a certain degree you could say like, oh, that's also like Scott's like weird like perspective on the issue, but also it's like, no, he's freezing his ex-girlfriend, so it's like Gideon is like his depiction in this show works so much better. And also like I like how even his more sinister stuff is just more like a funny joke that turns Julie on. Like,
because like I do like that he's still evil. Like he's just not like it's just like a fetish thing instead of being like he's like actually a monster.
Yeah, having a partner that he can plot with is such a cute touch.
Oh yeah, I love that Julie is also like evil, but like she's just kind of like petty. You know, she's just kind of a bitch, which rocks. We love her.
We love her so much. God.
So, Todd Ingram.
Todd Ingram?
Todd Ingram.
Also.
This is also the best possible. Like, speaking of best possible versions, I love that Todd Ingram and Wallace Wells practice their lines so much. Wonder what that's about.
Just repeatedly cutting to Todd's trailer with
lines in your trailer?
Him and Wallace.
I really do adore everything they choose to do with him. It's just, he's like, he's such an asshole in both the comics and the movie, and he doesn't really get to be a character beyond, like, oh, that's, like, that's Ramona's evil asshole ex-boyfriend that she dumped, mm-hmm. that, like, MV Adams is, like, dating and is trying to make Scott jealous of him towards, you know, about, like, it's, he's kind of, like, a tool more, like, he's a tool, but he's, like, he's mm-hmm. kind of more a, like, a lever with which other characters are pushed around in the comic and the movie. So him being mm-hmm. here and his characterization being, like, he's dumb and impulsive. And that means that, like, the first time a boy hits on him, he goes goo-goo over him. That's really fucking cute. Like, Todd's just adorable here.
There's some, like, really great fan art out there of, like, Todd and Wallace, or Todd, more accurately, like, pining after Wallace, and Wallace is just sort of like, babe, this is like an onset fling.
That's the thing.
I'm not that into you.
Wallace hits it, and, like, our man Todd just directly falls in love. I really love that they kept, what's the name of Wallace's, like, actual boyfriend? It was, like,
his Minute? His psychic boyfriend?
The Wallace's, the guy that Wallace ends up with.
I'm blanking off the top of my head.
But, yeah, he at the very end, because it's the guy from the comics.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, well, I think what you're driving at is that Wallace, you know, talks about this idea that he has, like, no affection for any, like, he hits it and quits it. Like, there are no sparks. Like, sparks is a very, like, pointed visual.
It's explication
visual
of, like, it's a visual metaphor.
Yeah, it's a very explicit metaphor for, like, affection that people feel for each other. And Todd is like, there were sparks! And, like, Wallace is like, I didn't see any. And it's this idea that there was, Brian Lee O'Malley actually even addressed this on his Twitter a while ago, where people are like, man, Wallace is such a jerk. And he was like, yeah, I know. That's kind of how I wrote him. He is supposed to be kind of a jerk.
I mean, everybody, like, everybody's kind of a jerk, you know, in Scott Pilgrim. Like, that's the point. Everybody in their 20s is kind of an asshole. Growing up is learning that and forgiving and trying not to be that kind of person. Also, right. I remember the name of Wallace's boyfriend, Mobile, I think his name is. Mobile.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I love that in, like, the Where Are They Now, like, post-credits bit, he and Mobile go on a date and they kiss, and then Wallace sees sparks and he almost falls into a canal. Because he's like, they're real?
Just fantastic. It's a really cute moment.
It's really cute. Like, because it's God, I Scott Pilgrim is just, it's good, folks. It's good.
Yeah. Something else about the Where Are They Now sequence, Anna Monoguchi, who also is co-orchestrating the music with Joseph Trapanese. They just, when you're watching that scene and the music starts for a bit, you're kind of just, you just kind of tune it out a bit, and then you pick up some of the notes. It's like, holy shit, this is a God Only Knows cover. What the hell?
God.
It's really good.
It's great.
I didn't even catch that. Oh my God.
Yeah. But they have a little bit to do before we get to the epilogue, because I think we should talk about, like, the big finale of this, so. One of the plot elements, that this is like a, like, time travel plot. Yeah. And Scott has been pulled into the future by his future self, because at some undetermined point in the future, Ramona and Scott hit a rough patch.
Well, it's determined. It's 12 or 13 years after they get married, which they've been, they get married for a long ass time. 13 years is a long time to be married. And they divorce, they're separated, he says. That's the important part. They're separated. They're not divorced. Because the thing is, Ramona still likes Scott. Like, they're still, like, it's just she needed space.
Uh-huh. Sure. And so what happens is in that first time, like, Scott gets pulled into the future, like, he meets his future self, voiced by Will Forte, and learns about, like, this eventual breakup. Yeah, or not, like, future Scott interprets it as, like, a breakup, and it sort of seeds this idea of, like, the big conflict at the end is once again Scott fighting a version of himself, which is a pretty common theme in, like, Scott Pilgrim media just in general, is that he has to face some dark version of himself, and he has
Scott
to
here, folks.
Nega Scott is so, like,
Nega Scott in the movie is great. Nega Scott in the comics, not quite, but Nega Scott in the movie is a good guy. They go out for lunch or brunch.
They're going to get waffles later, pancakes or whatever. But yeah, it ends with this, like, big fight basically on the moon.
Yeah, because old Scott's idea, the reason why he got into all of this is that it's that very immature sort of feeling you have when an emotional thing is just fresh, especially a breakup, where it's like, I wish this had never happened. I'm going to do everything in my power. And then old Scott, because he has the ability to, is like, I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure it never did happen, so I can avoid feeling this way 13 years later.
Right. It's like, Scott is, much like Ramona, is, like, so deeply afraid of being hurt by other people. And I do love that bit, like, during the finale, when they are animating future Scott like Broly from Dragon Ball. It's an incredible fight, by the way.
He punches the, like, highlights. If you didn't catch it, he punches the highlights out of Knives' hair.
I didn't catch that.
I had to go back, like, four times, but it happens. It's not an animation error. She dives in, and when he punches her, next time she gets up, she doesn't have the highlights in her hair anymore.
Yeah. Also, they have power-up assists, and they're animated the same way they are in the video game.
It's so good.
Like, they straight up use a boss theme, I think, from the original Scott Pilgrim video game, like, during this big, like, climactic finale, in which, like, all the evil exes are, like, joining in to try and fight off future Scott, because he's pulled them into this, like, the moon pocket dimension.
Well, pointedly, he is picking the fight with them. Which, I love the inversion of Scott Pilgrim versus the world here. Like, it is, he has picked this fight. Like, he summons them all in, and they're like, oh, well, we have no problem with you, man. I want to go. And he's like, oh, but I got problem with you guys. And I love everything about even older Scott. I think the idea that, like, you know, that kind of, well, a thing that I kind of, like, meditate on a bit is that you can't really hate yourself into a better version of you, and older Scott is trying to hate himself into a better version of himself, you know.
Right.
And yeah, like, I mean, his takeaway from, like, you know, Scott and Ramona still, from him and Ramona still getting married even after he meddles with the past, is that, like, he just needs to meddle with the past harder instead of, like, you know, she genuinely cares about him, is fantastic. You know, it's a really good, like, we get a lot of Scott's, Scott goes through a character arc in, like, it fast tracks his characterization so well. We get almost more depth out of him than we got, like, in the movie, or even arguably the comics. Incredible economy of writing.
Because I think it has a lot to do with, like, again, Brian Lee O'Malley has been thinking about these characters for, like, so long, and I really love that, like, moment in which, like, Scott and even older Scott are headbutting each other, and, like, Scott is just saying, let me live my life, let me make my own decisions. And even older Scott is like, but I'm you.
Made those decisions, you know. It's great. Because it's like, that's a kind of generic animeism, you know, like, or not animeism, but, like, a kind of very surface level, like, fictionism, where it's like, you are up against the like a future version of yourself, and you're like, but you gotta trust me, I'm gonna do it right. And it's like, that's you, dog. If they, you know, you don't trust yourself for a reason, you know, figure out why and deal with it. And I'm glad they kind of dismissed it, because like, older Scott is right. Like, Scott still has, like, you know, Scott hasn't solved his problems. I also love that, like, even older Scott is, like, when he found out he was still, like, married, he was still, well, married, separated from, when he was still, like, you know, in the situation with Ramona, he went into, he trained for 10 years, and when Scott's, like, mentions that he's a bad guy, he's like, bad guy, I've been living like a freaking monk, and it's like, you've shut yourself up away from society. Like, that's not self-improvement, that's like wallowing in self-pity.
Right.
You've just been doing it with style.
Yeah, and then you have that moment where even older Ramona shows up, and like, I do love even older Ramona, to just be like how she like directly confronts him is like, I think like there's that moment in which like we could have, you know, talking about like we could have worked things out and they still can, but at the same time it's like at like when he asks like it's like, are you saying that you still like what's the line that he says? Like
I think he basically asks Ramona. Yeah, he asks her if she still wants to be with him. And she's like,
that
ship has sailed. It's been 10 years.
But also, she also points out that, like, in some way, you have even older Ramona finding a way to, like, as she says, like, okay, no, we can't do that anymore, but we can still, like, work something out.
Essentially. Like,
which is, like, the theme of the show to this point, where it's, like, you know, she may not, like, she will never have that relationship that she had with her evil exes, like, again, but she doesn't want nor need nor like those ships have sailed, but they can, yeah, they grew up.
That's the thing Scott Pilgrim is a series about growing up, and like about growing up in a lot of different ways, and like the point is that she grew up, like they are not the same, she's not the same person she was before Scott like 10 years ago. And like that's that, and like it's all about like reconciling with who you were before you grew up and the decisions you made before you grew up, as somebody who has since grown up and, you know, is coming back with that perspective. That's kind of the most fascinating thing about Takes Off, because like it really does feel like Brian Lee O'Malley, you know, like he's like 40 I think now.
Yeah,
I think he's 40, and he was like 30s. He was like late 20s, early 30s when the movie was made. And of course, when he was writing the comics, he was in his like he was about Scott's age, like in his mid 20s. So it's really interesting. What's up?
For the record, he is 44.
44. Okay. Yeah, it's really interesting seeing the evolution, because I always think of Scott Pilgrim as a working conversation with itself, because like the movie changed the ending to the comic, right, where instead of getting the power of love, it's the power of self-respect, you know.
Yeah, that is such a very pointed change.
It's a very intentional change, and that kind of is like the deal here, is that like, because that felt like a reaction to, you know, the way Brian Lee O'Malley going back and reading what he wrote and going, well, I could probably improve on that. And this feels a reaction to that as well, you know.
Yeah, there's two moments in particular that really stick out to me in that regard. The first is when Scott finally meets up with Knives again and basically mentions, yeah, it was a bad idea to be dating a high schooler, and her response is basically, I'm really happy you're alive, but I'm also happy you died, because I needed to get through some stuff. And the second moment is basically during that old Scott fight, even older Scott fight, Ramona and Scott do take a moment to be like, you know, if this is what it's going to turn into, maybe we really aren't okay with each other. But through Ramona and even older Ramona kind of just merging for a moment and sharing their thoughts, it's like, it's still worth trying. And now that we're seeing how it turns out, there is a chance that we can be better than this and more mature than this.
Yeah, you have this Ramona reaching her own apotheosis in recognizing that, like, she is, like, Scott is someone who does not have the perspective, like, outside of himself. And Ramona is also very self-centered and is, they, like, there's this realization that, like, she says to him, like, I'm gonna try and run away. You're gonna try and remind me why I should stay. Or something like that. And I think it's, like, a really nice moment. And also, like, the show has the maturity to, like, recognize that, like, the relationships between people can change, and they do change, often for the better. And because you have the epilogue where everyone is just kind of having their, like, pretty much everybody gets out and has their own, like, happy ending.
Yeah.
But they had to fucking work for it. Like,
mm-hmm.
You know, like I was joking earlier, this is rebuild of Scott Pilgrim, but it's like,
it is literally rebuild of Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah. Where they have to, like, they have to confront themselves and, but through that process, become better people. And it's just nice. It's just really nice. Like, if they'll probably not do a second season, like, Brian Lee O'Malley has said as such that he doesn't plan for a second season. But the thing I would want to see would be, like, a slice of life sort of show. And I don't think Netflix would be down for that sort of thing. But at the end of the day, like, I think this is just a really solid season of anime where it tells a nice, complete story that is made better by having knowledge of, like, the other things in this series.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. It is a fantastic, like, self-contained work. And, like, the economy of writing is fantastic and takes off. Like, there is not one moment wasted or, like, one scene that needed to be extended. You know, it is... I actually don't want a sequel, is the thing. Like, if the good performance on Netflix means that the Netflix team goes up to Brian Lee O'Malley and says, we need more Scott Pilgrim now. I want Brian Lee O'Malley to walk off. I need him to walk away. Like,
okay.
I'm down for,
here's
like,
a compromise. He writes not light novels, but web comics about all the characters.
I love the characters. I am good not seeing them again. I'm going to be honest. Like, I think it's the kind of horror movie, you know, the less you show the monster, the more effective it is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, these
or it's
characters
just, like,
are great.
Appreciate
I just,
what we
I
have,
appreciate them.
You know?
I think this is a really, really good send-off to Scott Pilgrim. I think, you know, kind of very Ramona of me, I know. Very, very breaking up with my soon-to-be evil ex of me. But I think it is in the author's best interest to quit while they're ahead, you know? You ended on a note like takes on like the ending of Takes Off. You take your bow, and then no matter how, like, listen, somebody can hand you a fistful of money and say, make more. And if you need that money, you make more. But for the sake of artistic integrity, please don't make more.
Yeah. Actually, a better idea. Brian Lee O'Malley has other comics.
Yeah. Like, they're making a movie of Seconds, I think.
They are?
Yeah, I'm reasonably sure that was greenlighted.
I would like that because I really like Seconds.
It's been sitting on my shelf forever. I haven't finished it.
it's really good.
I trust that anything that like Brian Lee O'Malley and I forget his name, the co-writer. I've been like crediting everything to Brian Lee O'Malley, and I'm sure he's like the major player, but what was his name? The other guy who worked with him?
Ben David Grabinski.
Yes. I like O'Malley and Grabinski, I think, like anything they write in the future, you know, I feel like I can trust to have the same charm as Scott Pilgrim.
And here's the thing. There is a quote from Brian Lee O'Malley that has been, like, rattling in my brain for the better part of a decade now. Like, it was a tweet that he put out, like, years and years ago, in which he said at one point, like, after, like, this was, like, after the movie had come out, and, like, he in the lead up to the publishing of Seconds, and he was talking about, like, I will never make anything as popular or as well-received as Scott Pilgrim ever again, and that is such a relieving idea.
Yeah,
because it's like he did it, he won.
Yeah, you like, got your cash cow franchise, you can take your bow. Well, it's not like a cash cow franchise, but you got your big hit, and then you can take your bow and like segue off the stage, and now like it doesn't really matter what follows it up, you know, you have that pressure
exactly
relieved. Shit, I need to take back one of the things I said. If there's one thing that I would have wanted in Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, I don't know how they would have ever worked it in, but I really would have liked to have at least seen a reference to Lisa Miller, because she wasn't, because they composited her into, I think they just excised her from the movie. She wasn't in the movie, and she's kind of important in the comic. I feel like Scott's rejection of her and continued pursuit of Ramona symbolizes like an intent to put away, like an intent to grow up, you know, and not simply like fall back into the patterns that he's been maintaining since like high school, you know?
Yeah.
But also like she's kind of a bit part.
Yeah. There are other things that are worth talking about, like with like, not that she isn't important, but just sort of like this idea of, it was very like Takes Off was very focused. I would have liked, like, I personally probably would have wanted more episodes, but that's just me being like, I don't love the Netflix model of like having weird episode counts. Like, I think, you know, having like a few more wouldn't have hurt it. But as you said, there's so much like lots of like all killer, no filler, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this is very much that, like, they have taken advantage of the format, and they tell a very effective story in these 8 episodes, and I think at the end of the day, like, Scott Pilgrim Takes Off is, like, this really fantastic, like, you know, love letter to the messy process of growing up, and then reflecting on how you grew up.
Yeah, it's a fantastic show, and I'm very glad it exists.
Do we have any other thoughts on Scott Pilgrim Takes Off?
I don't think so. I think that just about covers it.
We're gonna take that personality quiz right now and see what we get.
Take that personality. Okay, first I need the number, the 16-digit number on your credit card, the 3 numbers on the back, and then
your zip code.
Zip code, and also the expiry date and your mother's maiden name. If you can hit me with the last 4 of your socials, I can tell you not only what Scott Pilgrim is, but I can tell you what your element is when you get like a power up, which is, I think, how it works.
Yep.
I've never played a video game in my life. I don't know.
Oh my god. You're the fake gamer around here.
I'm the fake gamer. I've never I don't even know what a video game looks like.
Jackie, thank you for joining us. Really appreciate you coming on to talk about this show that we really enjoyed together. We watched it together. I watched it with Jed. I've seen it a couple times. I might watch it again at some point. Like, it's
I'm watching it right now.
It was just like Oh, god damn it.
I'm passive.
It's supposed to be podcast.
I'm sorry. It's, oh, cool. I hope Scott beats this Matthew Patel guy. Oh, no!
Jackie, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, I'm on co-host. I if you like just like Google your lizard friend, you'll find me. I'm somewhere. Right. I'm on like co-host. Somewhere. I'm on the Twitter for however long that lasts. I am on I don't even know what I'm on anymore. I haven't streamed in a long time on Twitch. But you can still follow me there. I have I'm in your walls.
Oh my god, this again. This old chestnut.
This old chestnut, yeah. I still haven't gotten out of your walls. Can you please, like, open a door or something so I can, like, leave? It's starting to, like, you're now part I'm kind of stuck. Like, I need help.
You're like a critical part of the insulation of this house now.
It's really...
Unfortunately.
December is coming. I'm in trouble. It's getting cold, dog. I need help. But yeah, that's me.
Alright. Well, this is a patron show, you know where we are, but...
No, where are you?
Thank you everyone for joining us. Right here. Existing. In this moment.
God, we should share this moment together. That'd be pretty pog.
Yeah.
This is beautiful. This is a beautiful moment we're having here, dear viewer. Listener.
This is our precious little life.
God. Good title drop here. I'm going to give you 10 points for that.
Thank you. Until next time, folks. Peace out.
See you next time. Absolutely, 100%. I'll be there. Hope you are, too.